Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast with NBA shooting coach Dave Love and your host, Matt Robertson. Exploring the cutting edge of evidence-based shooting development in basketball today. From shooting form to skill acquisition to shot metrics. This is the Coach Dave Love Podcast.
Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Robertson, and with me, as always, the one, the only, the coach, Dave Love. What's going on today, Dave?
What's up, Maddie? We've got accessories today. I've got the gigantic over-ear headphones. You've got the nice, sleek earbuds. We're trying to figure out if we can get the audio quality just a little bit better on zero budget, and I'm excited to see what happens.
So, full transparency, we recorded this podcast yesterday. However, today is a new day, and I think that there's some improvements to be made. And so we're off to the races already, but you started the podcast yesterday with a question that I would love for you to answer and then send my way. I'm struggling right now.
All right. So you're on new dad, no sleep, so we'll forgive you. The question I asked yesterday was, do you have a nickname? And now I know that you do, but you may as well share with our people. What's your nickname,
man? That's a question that you've never asked me before. Generally, everybody calls me Maddie. My given name is Matthew. However, when I was my first year playing pro, it was like 2012, 2013, somewhere in there. And I played with a bunch of guys from Atlanta. And that was about the time that Matt Ryan was sort of in the middle of his prime, and so I got a lot of Matty Ice, which nobody really calls me anymore, although one of my former teammates lived here in town, married a girl from here, still plays in Japan, and comes home from the summer, and he exclusively calls me Matty Ice, but otherwise, that's just about it. What's the story?
I told you yesterday, I have three friends in the world that call me Davis with an S in reference to Davis Love III, the golfer from the 80s and 90s, I guess. And so if ever I get a text message from an unknown number that says, "Hey, Davis," then I know it's one of those three people who has a new cell phone or a new number. I've kind of tricked a couple of my players into, like, a couple of them will call me D-Lo, and I made the joke yesterday because all I do is recycle my old jokes. I'll recycle this one again. That's I feel like that's sort of like calling the guy that's a little overweight, calling him Slim. That I've given me sort of not that D-Lo is a cool name, but it's far cooler than I am. And I think that's sort of why they kind of went with that nickname.
I really like that. Still funny. I will tell you, a little younger than you, but I'm aware of who Davis Love III is, not because I watched him play golf, but because of Pebble Beats for the Sega Genesis. A lot of hours playing with my dad back in the day, 1990. Four, somewhere in there. So Davis Love III, great looking swing in 32-bit animation, really good stuff too.
Yeah, perfect. So we've talked about the fact that we recorded this yesterday, and it was my suggestion to do it again, although I thought that what we did yesterday was good. I feel like we could be better organized. And so we have always talked about in our literally 10 or 11 podcasts that we've done, we've talked about being transparent, and so I just want to see, like, if we can kind of stay on course a little bit better. So I'm going to take the reins a little bit, and I'm going to let you be the voice of the audience a little bit more, and say, like, if you were a coach that we're just sitting having a beer together, what kinds of questions would you have? And do you remember the question that you started with yesterday? Because I feel like that was a good question.
Yeah, so up until yesterday, I did not know the answer to this question. I kind of said, Dave, I always have just referred to you as my feeding coach buddy. You are obviously a feeding coach. However, I noticed in a bunch of places you're listed as a feeding consultant. And I was just curious, like, what is the difference between those two things?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different things playing into that. I am a shooting coach. I coach people to improve their shooting. But there are particular times and cases where I will describe myself as a consultant. And it's largely out of respect to the people in those same situations that are there on an everyday basis. So I'm working for an NBA team and a G League team right now. And there are coaches on both those teams that are there every day. That's when I would use the word coach. But since I'm not there, as a show of respect to them, I make sure that I classify myself as a consultant. What is my consultant job is to be a shooting coach. But I'm not there on a day-to-day basis. And it's something that I think especially at the higher levels, NBA teams are starting to move towards more just because staffs are getting so big. I was shocked coming in to my first day with the Dallas Mavericks and having not been with a team for three or four years. I was shocked at how much the staffs had grown in those 3 years or 4 years, whatever it was. And so I feel like things are moving more in this direction of, yeah, we've got a full-time group, and then we've got some other consultants that we bring in periodically because there's just not enough time for everyone.
No, that's really interesting. And I know that at one point in time, like when you started your career, you were the team student coach or the player student coach, and you sort of, I don't know if it's made your way up, but sort of diverted just a touch to this consultant type role. Can we talk a little bit about the origin story? You know, if you're the superhero or the supervillain, it's a great origin story. Like, how did someone that's at the level that you're at, how did you get started? Like, what was the, actually, let me reframe, let me simplify. What was the step just before your first job in the NBA?
My step just before that was working with the University of Calgary men's basketball team in my hometown. And as basically a shooting consultant too, even though I live here, I had a full-time job. And so I was, and my clinic business, I wasn't able to be, with the team on a day-to-day basis. So I would just come in and I'd work with a handful of players a couple of times a week. And so just to give people a frame of reference, I think everybody's kind of aware of the U.S. college system, but probably not the Canadian system. The University of Calgary would be like a perennial top 10 program in the country. And often a top five kind of program that has won a national championship in the last 5 years and routinely going to, not routinely, but in the mix to go to a Final Four. But they would compete competitively against a mid-major Division One program in the U.S. that the Kentuckys and the Kansases and Dukes, those games probably would not be competitive. But against Weber State or programs like that would probably be fairly competitive games.
So you started you were with the University of Calgary Dinos. What was that like? What was your week-to-week look like? Who were you working with? And how did you make that jump? I think is my first section of questioning.
So we're going to spend this talking about like what does it look like to be a shooting consultant, and then like what do I currently do, what have I done, what do I currently do, and then what do I think we can improve and do better in the future is kind of what I want to go through today. So what starting with the what have we done part of it. When I worked for the Dinos, I would usually have at the beginning of the season or in the off season, I would kind of approach two or three guys that I felt like I could really help out. And usually the weaker shooters, those were the projects that I enjoy working on and working with, and that I feel like need help of the shooting coach the most. So I would just approach the, I would watch for a couple of weeks to see who the weaker shooters were, why were they working, do I feel like I can help them, and then would reach out and start a conversation. More often than not, guys were very, very open to the fact that they would like help. And so throughout that season, we'd meet on a very regular basis when I was in town, usually a couple of times a week for an hour to 45 minutes per workout to develop their shooting mechanics.
Okay. So that's your sort of Calgary situation. How did you get there? Like, give me the full, like, back to the start. How did you even start becoming a shooting coach, and how did you work your way up the levels to even be in that position with the Calgary Dinos?
Well, I had lucked into meeting a wonderful mentor who still I consider a close friend, and he works in the NBA. I met him when I was a terrible Canadian player in high school. And he taught me about shooting. And when he left, he was a minor league player for a team that we had in town, and I was a ball boy for the team. When he left town as a player, he started to encourage me to start teaching younger players, and I would have been early to mid 20s at that point. And it took me a little while to realize that I would actually have to do the work in building this business. But I always liked the idea of I'm going to be a shooting coach one day. And then finally, I started working with 12-year-old kids, usually like in a driveway or at a hoop at the YMCA that we could get onto, or at their church, just kind of big borrowing and stealing any gym time that we could get. And then just working my way up to working with older players by word of mouth. There was no social media. There was internet, but I don't think we would have had a presence to like grow a business that way quite at that time. And so it was all word of mouth. And then I started doing camps for that age kids, and then started working with a college player who then moved over to the university. And after working with that player, the university coach knew me a little bit. And when I approached him to ask if I could volunteer to be his shooting coach, I think he was very gracious and said, absolutely. But I think he said, well, what's the harm? If I don't have to pay you, then sure, go do whatever you think you want to do. And so that was the step that led me to being the University of Calgary shooting coach.
Okay. So you alluded to the fact that your mentor kind of helped open some doors for you. So you get your first NBA call. What does that look like? You go to work with the whole team, like leading up to the, you know, first week of camp with these guys. Like, what are you doing and who are you working with?
Yeah, this will be like the question that I think even the average coach, they don't have a perception of what things look like at the NBA level, or don't understand the range of what it could look like. And so I kind of, that's part of the genesis for this episode, was to shed a little light on what does my job actually look like. That I get asked all the time at clinics by young players and coaches, you're with the Dallas Mavericks, do you work with Luka and Kyrie? And I don't. That's their perception. Those are the two players they think of, and so they assume if you're there, you must work it. And it's often not the case that I've always been hired to work with one player. And that's not that it has to go that way. I think it's just a coincidence that in my first four opportunities, they all started with, we have a single player in mind. And so when it was the Phoenix Suns, I was hired by Steve Nash. Go ahead. I know where you want to go with this.
Timeout, I misspoke.
I was not hired by Steve Nash. I was hired by Steve Kerr. I make that mistake occasionally, where those two are so tied together and such equally nice guys that I misspoke. Steve Kerr was the one that hired.
No, that's okay. One of my favorite things, when we are able to get together, it's often in basketball settings. So whether it was in November in Dallas or in July at Summer League, we are in large basketball spaces hanging out together, and we have great chats, but we also play fun games. And one of my favorite fun games is the obscure NBA jersey. So for Dave, can you remember an example of the last few years? We're sitting in a crowded space and somebody walks by in an absurd, or not an absurd, sorry, obscure. Yeah, it's an absurd jersey. Any come to mind?
Well, yeah, like the game is not, oh, there's a LeBron James jersey and there's a Kobe Bryant jersey. And we want, like you mentioned yesterday, a Thunder Dan Marley jersey. And I even wonder, I don't think it was a Phoenix Suns Thunder Dan Marley. I think it might have been like a Miami Heat or Cleveland Cavalier. Like, so the more obscure, the better. And you win with an obscure player or an obscure jersey. So you could have a Larry Bird jersey potentially if it was, I forget the high school we went to. If you wore a Larry Bird high school jersey, you might have a chance to win that day. And that's the game that we play.
Like, I've seen a Vogt John Leonard jersey, which is delightful. A Rafer Alston jersey, also delightful. So the reason I bring this up, Dave, is because you're sitting in your home office today. And the first time that we talked, video chatted, when you were sitting in this office, I noticed you had a Phoenix Suns jersey behind you. And generally, as a Canadian coach and a Canadian basketball enthusiast, the name on that jersey is often Nath, which not her, but Nath. But I knew a bit about your work history. And so I said, Dave, please tell me what you're sitting in front of is a Louis Amundsen jersey.
It is. So yeah, that's one thing I do. And it started with Lou. I made the declaration to myself that every player that I spent significant time with, I was going to get a signed jersey from. And so I've been lucky enough to amass a small collection of jerseys of my guys that will never be monetized. They are strictly sentimental for me. So
I love that. Thank you for allowing me that derailment. So Steve Kerr hires you, work with Lou Amundsen. What's the lead up to that look like?
Yeah, I spend as much time as I possibly can watching as much video as I possibly can of the player. That's usually on Synergy. And I'm sure we'll do an episode where I talk about like watching how I watch video of players. But we'll start on Synergy. And then I'll try and find if there's anything on YouTube or Instagram because those have now actually become pretty good resources for seeing different angles of video. And I'll try and watch everything that I possibly can from the player that I'm being hired with or hired for. But then it is always the case that the first 5 minutes in the gym is more valuable than the 10 hours I spend watching video leading up to that. I'll learn more in the first 5 minutes actually with the player than all of the video combined.
Still good to do the pre-work, still good to do the research. It just is a sort of a hazard of the business that being in the gym with somebody and getting that real angle just makes a difference.
Yeah. And so,
so you're in the gym. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. I think we're both going the same direction. Hired to work with the one player, and then with each team, especially Orlando, it had a chance to evolve. And so with Orlando, I was there 4 years. The first year was exclusively Aaron Gordon. And so it was working with Aaron Gordon, build a relationship with Elfrid Payton. And then the second year was Elfrid Payton becomes the primary focus. Aaron becomes the secondary focus because we've already got a good amount of time with him. And now build a relationship with these couple of guys. And then the third year, Elfrid Payton was still the focus. Dwayne Dedman became the secondary. And now I've got 2 years of history with Aaron Gordon. He doesn't need as much time. And you're building a relationship with others. And then Dwayne got signed a free agency, I believe. Bismack Biyombo comes in. So it grew to the point where I had three guys that I was spending consistent time with. And others that were just little, I talk about, or my mentor talks about being a lifeguard for different players. That he, you know, he's in the pool as the instructor, the swimming instructor with two or three guys doing the heavy lifting, but he'll be the lifeguard for a few others. And that was starting to evolve in my relationship with Magic at the time too.
So I have an example of like my buddy's a chiropractor and he walks through the mall and he sees all the people and he's like, oh, that guy's terrible posture, I want to fix him, and that lady's walking with a weird limp and I want to fix her. And I know you've told me stories previously about you must just be watching these guys shoot that are not your main focus, that are they're in the deep end swimming around. But you just must be cataloging little things like, oh, that was weird, going to his left. He did, like, what is that like? Do you have any examples of that for me?
That's a side of my brain that I won't ever shut off. Like, as soon as somebody starts to shoot a basketball, I'm breaking it down in my head, and for better or for worse. And then there have been occurrences where Channing Frye happened to be a guy that I never really worked with, but was coincidentally on the first three teams that I worked for. He was a Phoenix Sun, and then he was with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and then he came to Orlando. And so even though we didn't work together, I was one of the familiar faces when he first arrived in Orlando. And having seen me then work with a couple of guys, there was a moment that where he's, I think he was coming back from an injury. And he kind of said, like, you got anything for me? Like, have you noticed anything? And I said, well, they, you know, I actually hesitated to answer the question if I remember correctly, because I never want to give an already good shooter advice unless they're going to do the work. And I felt like he was maybe just asking casually, and I didn't want to put a negative idea in his head unless he actually wanted to work on the idea. And so I was hesitant, if I remember correctly, and then finally he got me to share what it was that I saw. And if I remember correctly, he got his spine vertical going probably left, but that intended to lean to his left going right. And so I talked about, like, yeah, as you're going right, just see if you can, like, really get your weight down on your right foot and get your spine vertical. You do that going left. And he could sort of feel, once I pointed it out, he could feel what I was talking about, and actually took steps to kind of improve that habit. And then the other example would be, and I think this is fits very nicely in the framework of this particular podcast. One of the advantages of being a consultant is I'm not with the players every day. And so little changes that if you're with the player every single day might happen so gradually that you might not notice the player's doing something differently. They just change by 2 degrees every day, there's no profound change. Whereas when I'm gone for 5 or 6 days or 10 days at a time, I can come back and those small incremental changes all of a sudden become very obvious to my eyes. And there was a day where I came into town in Orlando, and we had Evan Fournier, who I think the world of as a shooter. And he was just in one of those three game skids, like slumps, that for three games he hadn't been shooting the ball well. And I got in the practice gym and watched him. I thought, well, that's different. That doesn't look like Evan. And I could see a difference between what he was doing now and what he had done 10 days before. And continue to watch him, like, you know, that's definitely a thing. Like, that is definitely different than what I'm used to seeing. And so after, I think it was a pregame shoot around or game day shoot around, I just approached him and I said, like, Evan, can we spend 15 minutes together? And it's not that I want to change anything. I just see a difference between what you're doing now and what you used to do. And I know you're struggling a little bit now. Can I sort of show you what I see you doing differently and try and get you back on course for what you historically have done? And to his credit, I don't know what his internal dialogue would have been, because we hadn't really spoken to that point. But externally, he said, yeah, absolutely. And then did the three or four drills for 15 minutes that I prescribed for him, and listened to my explanations on why, and shot the ball really well the game that night. And that may be a coincidence that maybe he was going to do that anyways, but I took great pride in the fact that, you know, this was somebody that just in a short period of time, I was able to help get back on track.
You take that moment, you put it in your cap. It's like our head coach when he draws up another bounce play in time, or calls something that's not really in the usual playbook, and we get a bucket out of it. I'm like, all right, two on the board for coach. That's we'll put that in the cap right now.
Perfect. So you want to take a break? Sorry, so this is me trying to take the lead a little bit more, so that let's take a little break, and we'll be back in a second.
Hey there, basketball fans. I'm NBA shooting coach Dave Love, and I've got exciting news just for you. Introducing my exclusive free basketball shooting newsletter. It's packed with insights and techniques straight from the hardwood. Have you ever wondered how NBA players improve their shots? Or how you could get to the next level, whether you're a college player, a coach, or a budding youth player? My newsletter brings all this and more directly to your inbox. Each edition is a deep dive into the world of basketball shooting. I'll share some of the tips and ideas that I use with my NBA clients, tailored for every level of the game. But wait, there's more. Subscribers receive exclusive monthly discounts on my online products. From training videos to personalized coaching sessions, you'll get it all for a fraction of the price. And the best part of all, it's absolutely free to join. So what are you waiting for? Elevate your game and join a community of passionate players and coaches from around the globe. Signing up is easy. Just visit CoachDaveLove.com.
Welcome back. Coach Dave, we're on the same page. Just about to throw the commercial and you just like, cookies, swipe that bad boy. Sam, what were you going to say?
Well, I want to see, like, can we start to talk about what does an average day look like? And logistically, how do I do my job? And and I think this is something that we can break up into a couple of different sections. So the first section would be that we have off-season, we have in-season, and then even within in season, we have practice days and game days. So there's really three different kinds of days that I'll encounter. And so starting with that off season, this is really when I do the bulk of my work, that I am there to kind of change motor patterns and help players learn new habits. And that's easier to do and probably better for the player if we can do that when they don't have to perform in a meaningful game for a little while. So in an off season, I'll usually be involved with the team for a week, like Monday to Thursday, Monday to Friday, and then home for a week, and just alternate back and forth. And there's a reason why I do it that way. And the reason is self-organization, that I want to give the players the opportunity to forget what they've learned from me in the course of the time that we spent together. And I wanted, because the more often they forget, the longer they're going to be, the longer they're going to remember. But then I also want to build the dependency on themselves to solve the problem, that I don't want to be the one who's constantly telling them what to do and solving problems for them. I want them to learn to solve problems for themselves.
So you kind of answered my question after the fact, but you want them to forget, because once they learn, forget, they're going to remember for a longer period of time because of that. Because of that mechanism. Okay. Sorry.
The concept is forgetting curves. Like if you're a coach, just do a quick Google search of forgetting curves. And I went to interview with an NBA team, and they said, we want you there with the players every single day. I said, no, you don't. That's a mistake. If you have me there with a player every single day, they become dependent on me, the coach, and we need them to be dependent on themselves. We want them to forget, and the more often they forget, the longer they're going to remember. So the next part.
You'll be on the floor in their ear with them, right? When they're in the game, that's just, you're running alongside them. Just, you know, don't forget, Spider-Man, don't, you know, obviously that's.
Right. That's exactly the reason why I'll never be there. I'll never be on the floor. And so, like, I've got to empower them to be able to solve these problems for themselves. So in an off season, I'll be in town for a week, gone for a week, in town, and alternate back and forth. Within those days where I'm in town, typically I try to get two workouts per day with players. Now there'll be one workout that is probably more significant in time. I try to have that be at least 30 minutes, probably closer to 45. In early stages, it might be closer to an hour. And then the second workout of the day, that could be as short as 10 shots. For 5 minutes, that could be another half hour. It really kind of depends on what's going on that day. But again, I want them to remember in workout number one. I want them to forget as they go to do something else in the weight room or working with a different skills coach or through a team practice. And then I step in and remind them again so that they get just another touch point before they leave the gym.
So I've never asked you this question before. Short little tangent. You don't have to name the player, but generally in the off season, these guys go home to wherever their home is, whether it's in the city that they're playing in or not. Do you have a favorite place that you've gone in the off season a number of times to work with a player? You don't need to name the player, but a favorite city or town or region that you went to in the off season, just out of curiosity.
Phoenix, Arizona is pretty delightful, except in the middle of the summer. that can get a little oppressively hot. Orlando, just because I have friends there, is pretty wonderful. I initially went to LA and thought LA is terrible. Why do so many people? It's so inconvenient. It's so difficult to do everything. Everything is valet parking and an hour drive in between. And then I had Bismack Biyombo, who was in Santa Monica, and my hotel was in Santa Monica. And so I just walked everywhere, and the beach is right there. I never got in my car. And Santa Monica is pretty, LA may not be my favorite. Santa Monica is pretty, pretty awesome.
I love that. Okay. Thank you for indulging me. Okay. So that's your sort of off-season schedule. Specifically in Santa Monica, if you have players there, please reach out. In season, what does your schedule kind of look like when you're on set with these guys?
Yeah, so again, broken up into practice days and game days. Practice days, I'll try to do something a little bit similar to an off season, but we're probably not going to get a significant second workout. So typically teams will have, most teams call it vitamins, your daily vitamins. So they'll do an individual workout for players before practice or potentially after practice. So in Orlando, Chad Forcier has set up our daily vitamin along with Jay Hernandez. And so we had four side rims. And I'm trying to remember exactly how it went. I believe we had our young guys, so the rookies, for their daily vitamin. If practice was at 11, I believe they started at 9:30, and they would have half an hour, each an individual with a coach on one of the side rims. And then at 10 o'clock, two more guys would have come in. And so they'd have their 15-minute, or maybe it was 20-minute window. And then 10:20, another two guys come in. 10:40, another two come in. And then the remaining group would be after. So everybody on a daily basis got their daily vitamins. And different teams have different names for it and different kinds of setups. But that's when I came into town, the coach that would spend their vitamin time with my two or three guys would be a support system in my vitamin session with the players there. And the added benefit of this is their voice gets a break. And I don't mean physically, but the player gets a break from listening to that person's voice, and they get to listen to a new voice that they haven't heard in 10 days or so. And my voice is a little bit more engaging than it otherwise would be because it's new, and their voice gets to become new again down the road. And I think that's an often overlooked benefit of the consultant relationship, is that everybody, it's not just I come in with a fresh voice. The other people get to reset and become fresh after I leave.
So there are probably a lot of people listening to this who are parents who can probably appreciate that they say things and then somebody else will say something to their kid and it goes over completely differently. You have a fun story that you've said in another podcast before, but I love it. And if this is for first time listeners, it involves Grant Hill.
Right. So Grant was a player on the Phoenix Suns when I was there. Grant was one of the projects of my mentor, and probably the first big project of my mentor. And so I knew of Grant's story in a more intimate level than a lot of fans would have, just because I had that personal connection to what he had done years previous. And so when I went to work with Phoenix, I think my mentor had let Grant know that, hey, you'll see this guy and just be nice to him. And so Grant and I never really worked together because I felt like it would be inappropriate for me to jump in as a shooting coach when he's got a voice that he already trusted. So I left that alone, and we got to know each other as people, but I wasn't working with him as a coach. So then flash forward two or three years, and I was in Orlando, and Grant lived in Orlando at the time. And I got a text just saying, hey, Chip, or my mentor told me that you're going to be in town. Can I bring you to work with my daughter? And in my head, I thought, like, Grant, you're one of the 50 greatest players of all time. Like, I'm this guy that played bad high school basketball in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Like, I feel like you're going to be the better voice to work with your daughter than me. That's all going on in my head. And I said to him, like, I can. Like, why do you need me to? And he says, well, I'm her dad. She's not listening to me at all, but she'll listen to you because you're like, oh, okay. That, and now being a dad myself, I can see that, you know, people, kids especially, they don't want to learn from their parents, the voice they hear every day. They want to learn from somebody new that's not just dad, even if dad is one of the best players ever.
It is such a great note for, you know, your coach X, Vision 2 coach X, if you're coaching your kid, or even if it's somebody you've had in your program for 3 years or 4 years, where you're like, oh, I just feel like my voice doesn't resonate as much as it used to. Like, you are not alone. NBA legend Grant Hill also gets that from his kid when he's talking about basketball. So anyway, that's such a fun story. But when you're talking about voices in the gym, talk a little bit more about that, where having more voices is better. And then not a multitude of voices, but having more than one voice is better.
Yeah. Again, going back to that team that brought me in and that they wanted me there every single day. They also wanted to learn exactly what words I used with the players so that they could use those exact words. And that's a nice idea. We do all want to be on the same page, but those pages don't have to have exactly the same words on them. And so I always say, I believe it takes a village to raise a shooter. That's not just me that does it, but it's other people that are involved with that player as well. And so I want them to be involved with my workouts and hearing the things that I'm saying and seeing the drills and learning the details within the drills that they need to be paying attention to when I'm not there. But then I want them to take those words that I'm using and put their own spin on it. So I start with, and we've talked about this in one of the podcasts on cueing, I start with cues that make sense to me. And then I go mining for what makes sense to you, the player. Like, I say it this way, and it makes sense to me this way. How does it make sense to you? And that process can take a little while, where sometimes the player says, like, I don't really know. And if another coach can echo, well, I've heard Dave say it this way, I understand what he means, but I think of it this way. Now we've got two different cues that might resonate with the player. They're the same idea, but they're two different ways of saying it. And I feel like the more that you can have that, where you've got multiple voices all saying the same thing in different ways, then we're just increasing the opportunity for players to learn. So I want the assistant coaches and video coordinators that are there on a daily basis with the players to also be involved in my workouts.
So let's, I want to take another break, but before we do that, Coach, let's kind of zoom out for a second and look at like practical application of this for your, like your average AAU program or your average D1, you know, low mid-major or whatever the situation is. Can you give like a practical ideal situation for those teams that might not have a ton of resources, but have a couple of people available to them? Can you kind of go through something like that for me?
Yeah, I've done remote work with some individual players where it can be as simple as we get on a FaceTime call where they're in the gym, the player has an earbud in, the coach is holding the phone and they have the other earbud in. I'm able to talk to both of them and I'm able to guide the player through the workout. Done it like that with college players, college teams, a major Division I program, working to educate sort of one of the interns and a player and be their shooting coach and their shooting consultant. Where I'm not actually in the gym with them, but I'm teaching the two people, the player how to be a better player, the coach how to be an improved shooting coach, where they might not have the expertise.
Very cool. Appreciate you. Okay, let's take a quick break and
Hey basketball fans, Coach Dave Love here with an exclusive offer just for you, my personalized video shot analysis. Imagine having an NBA shooting coach analyze your shooting form, just like I do for the pros. That's exactly what you'll get with my video shot analysis. Here's how it works. You send me a video of your shot and I'll break it down frame by frame. I'll pinpoint your strengths and identify the areas of improvement and give you tailored advice to take your shot to the next level. You'll receive a comprehensive analysis designed just for you. Whether you're a beginner or an aspiring pro, my feedback will help you shoot with confidence and precision. It isn't just feedback, it's a game changer. With my video shot analysis, you're not just practicing, you're evolving, and every single shot counts. Ready to transform your game? Visit CoachDaveLove.com/store to learn more and get started. That's CoachDaveLove.com/store and look for video shot analysis.
Welcome back. So the last kind of section I want to hit, I want to talk about your kind of development. And obviously, you're really good at what you do. You've gotten to the level you're at, and I've watched you in action. Like it. Anyway, I don't want to be blowing smoke too far today, but you're really good at what you do. Not but, because that cancels everything before. And also, how do you want to keep developing and how do you want to keep growing as a coach? Like, what does that look like for you when you're at the level that you're at?
Yeah, there's three different areas that I want to really kind of, or two major areas. And one of them is broken up into a whole bunch of different subsections. So areas for growth in player development, and particularly with the involvement of a shooting consultant. I think shot metrics, which we've alluded to many times on the podcast, and eventually we'll be going into more detail on. That's my quantification of how people shoot the basketball. And so up until a few years ago, every coach, all we could coach with was our opinion. And now technology is allowing us to measure the way that people are shooting the basketball. And since we're able to measure, my research partner and I have done extensive work to quantify different parts to find out what do good shooters actually do more than weaker shooters. And so my coaching is still based on my opinion and my experience, but it's also supported by fact. And in one particular case, I've had to adjust my coaching because the research that we did showed that wasn't entirely true. It wasn't that it was necessarily false. And this is a common idea that is all over social media. It's not totally true. It's as false as it is true. And it's led us towards asking a lot better questions where, oh, the way that we're actually teaching this has as many drawbacks or more drawbacks as the benefits that we're talking about right now. And we've learned this because we've been able to measure and we're missing the point that actually matters. And so with shot metrics now, we're able to not only give an evidence-based reason for why we're working on things, but we're also able to give tangible proof that the coaching interventions are working or are not working as the player's building the habit, that we can show you this is the reason why we're doing this drill. It's helping you do this particular habit better, and I can show you with quantification that that is in fact true or that my coaching needs to be adjusted because it's not true.
So cool. We've talked about this a bunch off the air. We've alluded to it a number of times. The first time you told me about this, we were walking on the Vegas Strip, and it literally broke my brain. I think I said anything for about 30, 40 seconds, but it's really going through the ramifications of this. So I'm really excited to kind of dive into that a little deeper with you as we move forward and for some of the other projects as well. So, just a note on that. That really excites me. When you talk about tracking process throughout, like, are you looking still at the shot metrics or are you looking more at the sample sizes? Like, for example, I know that when you work with Aaron Gordon over the course of a full season, you're able to see the improvement in his free throw percentage. like with this, with these metrics, are you able to look at smaller sample sizes and glean more data, like from a smaller, you know, for a week or 2 weeks as opposed to a full season?
Yeah, or shot by shot. And that's not going to be turned around quickly at this point, but technology will get there probably in the next couple of years, where just like you can hit a golf ball and get feedback immediately on where the club was, where the ball went, we're going to get there with the quantification of shooting. But we're now, my research partner and I are on about a 24-hour turnaround. So we can get information on the shots that you took yesterday. And so the sample sizes are a lot smaller than a season. They're down to, 20 shots, and we can see specifically each shot within there. So that the learning just becomes far more granular and far more specific than over the course of the season. We think you got better. How are you quantifying that? It's right now the only thing we can quantify by is results, and that doesn't always tell the full picture, especially if somebody's learning a new habit.
Yeah, regression to the mean. I know in baseball they talked about it at times, and for shooters, that's somebody is historically a 40% shooter, and they thought they shot 36% for the first half of the season. Well, odds are the regression to the mean is probably going to happen if they're historically yada yada yada. Anyway, that's super interesting to me, and I don't want to derail too far, but thanks for clarifying for me. You have a second thing that you wanted to talk about. What is that? What is the second area of growth for you?
Yeah, so I think we can improve shot metrics, and then I think there's going to be massive improvement in skill acquisition ideas, learning how to coach better. And the biggest area of growth, I think, will be using periodization and understanding that different people need to train differently, and then different times will also require different kinds of practice. So the practical examples are going to be weaker shooters should be practicing in a very different way than elite shooters should be practicing. But then early on in an off season, you should be practicing in a very different way than you would be on a game day. And more often than not, like the most common drill in the NBA is to get spots. It, like, you'll hear it all the time. All right, let's get spots. And that basically means that player X is going to go shoot 10 shots from the corner or 50 shots from the corner. And then they're going to move to the wing and they're going to shoot X number more. And then they're going to move to the top of the key or maybe the slot. And they're going to shoot the same number again. And they just move their way around the different spots on the floor, doing mindless block practice. So there's a gentleman by the name of Fabian Ott, who I believe is now the goalkeeper coach for the U.S. men's soccer team. And he took the idea of periodizing strength and conditioning workouts and applied it to skill acquisition as well, that we need to define the certain times of kinds of practice and when are the ideal times for those practice with different kinds of people. So he broke it up into basically a blue, green, and red days. Blue would be a movement stability. That these are typically what we would say is form shooting. That the kind of work that a player would be doing, if we imagine form shooting, usually very deliberate and relatively low game representativeness. the other end of the spectrum would be the red days, and those would be sort of game preparatory work. And we want that to be very representative of the game, but then also tail off at the end with something resembling spot shooting, simply for confidence, that we want the player going into their performance feeling confident because they've seen the ball go in the basket. So those are the two common types of practice. So you imagine form shooting, and you imagine a scrimmage or spots. And unfortunately, that misses all of the green section that he has in between, which is the skill adaptability. And that's basically your bridge from whatever habits you're working on with your form into the game environment. And so he has that green section, the skill adaptability, broken up into three other sections, three subsections, one of which is the within skill. How do we make this habit that we're working on adaptable within the skill that we're doing it in? And then two other sections that are between skill adaptability. So now we're encompassing a dribble, a catch, and coming off screens. And we've got multiple skills being worked on in this situation. And that between skill adaptability has broken up into sort of more individual and more team-based. Or smaller groups and larger groups.
So can you kind of wrap that up in a succinct bow for me? It's not custom workouts for players. It's custom workouts for groups of players.
It's a framework for how people should be practicing, depending on how capable they are and then when in the season they are. And that's really, if I were to put a bow on periodization, that's how I would describe it.
Cool. Thank you. That's awesome. That really clarifies that for me because, customization in my mind is really important for the player. But also, if you can just put together a framework for this, these three best shooters on your team who need these kinds of work, that just makes more sense. It's efficient for everybody. And that's awesome.
Well, and I think it's really important that coaches start to understand this. This has been my latest obsession. This has been a couple of months of me trying to understand this research, which I became aware of it about 3 or 4 years ago, but I didn't have the base knowledge and skill acquisition yet to understand what I was learning. And it went largely over my head. And I've circled back to it just in the last couple of months. And now I understand enough of the components much better that all of a sudden this larger concept makes a lot more sense. And I think it's wildly important that we're doing far too much of what we think is the movement stability drills. The form shooting ideas, we're doing far too much of that, and usually without the level of accountability that it needs to have. So we're kind of wasting our time there. We're doing too much of the game representative practice, but missing a couple of the pieces within, like doing it at the wrong time and missing most of the benefits of that, and then never doing the most beneficial piece, which is that skill adaptability piece, because most coaches aren't aware that it really exists or how to use that or when to do it at all.
When you say stability, movement stability, is that like physical stability, like I'm trying to catch my balance, or is that a specific skill or habit or specific body part you're talking about?
The movement stability would be like the stability of the habit. That a poor shooter is unstable. They execute it a variety of different ways, and unfortunately, most of them don't work. And a stable movement pattern will probably have a smaller window. There, they execute. You take a photograph of Steph Curry, and his photographs will look very, very similar. In very different environments, he's able to reproduce close to the same movement pattern. And it's stable. He's able to recreate it, and it works. That would be the movement stability section. And then the adaptability is what a lot of people miss. Where I was just talking with a couple of days ago with a coach that I think the world of, Peter in Luxembourg. Well, shout out for Peter. I know he listens to the podcast, and we were just talking about searching for the perfect shot, and that's something I moved away from in the last 10 years or so. I'm not looking for the perfect shot. I'm looking to improve the biggest thing holding a player back, and then making it as adaptable as I can. And that doesn't mean that I don't have an idea of what perfect is or might be, but it's just the awareness that doesn't apply to the one individual that you're working at. They're not a theoretical person. They're a real person. What's the biggest thing holding them back? And can I get that closer to optimal and make it adaptable?
Just incremental improvement with every player you see, as opposed to tearing them down and trying to make them perfect. I think that's brilliant, and it makes a lot of sense to my brain. Coach Dave, let's take one last real quick break, and we'll wrap up on the way back in.
Hey there, basketball fans. Coach Dave Love here with an exciting opportunity to revolutionize your shooting game. Introducing my exclusive shot development systems, Pure Release, Consistency and Balance, and Fluidity and Arc. Each system is designed to target key aspects of your shooting technique, transforming you into a more effective player on the court. Pure Release focuses on perfecting your shot release. Consistency and Balance enhances your stability and accuracy, and Fluidity and Arc works on your ball path and trajectory of your shot. Find out the drills and progressions that I use with my NBA players to improve these important habits. Can't decide which one to choose? No worries, grab the bundle and get all three systems at a fantastic value. It's a complete package to elevate every part of your shooting game. And there's a special deal for all my podcast listeners. Use the promo code PODCAST20 at checkout to save 20% on any of the shot development systems. Don't miss this chance to train like the pros. Visit CoachDaveLove.com/store and take your first step towards shooting success. That's CoachDaveLove.com/store.
Welcome back. Okay, Dave, what I want you to do is take one big takeaway. So if I'm a Division I coach and an assistant GM in the NBA or the G League, I'm listening to this podcast, what's the one big takeaway from this episode that you might know?
Oh, man, the one big one would be that, there's like four. Periodization would be the one big that like understand, unfortunately, there's a lot that goes into this, but that not everybody should be practicing the same way at the same time.
That's the clip. I like that. Coach Dave, you're the best. I find every time we do one of these, I have a great time anyway, and would be loving these conversations, even if there weren't dozens of people listening. But I do learn things every time. And so I really appreciate the expertise and appreciate the time. If people want to engage with you, where can they find you, and how would you like them to engage with you?
The best places are going to be Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and my newsletter. So Coach Dave Love, if you just kind of on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, Coach Dave Love or CoachDaveLove.com for my newsletter. Those would be the best places. I would love for people to grab a clip from one of these shows that resonated with them. We post some of them on a weekly basis or throughout the week on Twitter in particular. If something resonated with you, then just retweet that and let your followers know that uh, that, there was something in this podcast that was beneficial to you.
Awesome. And also, if there are ideas that are great for you that have worked for your teams, please send those messages along as well. That's always encouraging for us, and we can share for others as well. So thank you very much for listening to the end. If you're not already, please subscribe, like, rate, whatever you can do on the platform you're on. We would appreciate it. Thanks for your time, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Coach Dave.
Thank you, bud.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Coach Dave Love Podcast. To stay up to date with our future episodes, please remember to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to sign up for Coach Love's free shooting newsletter on CoachDaveLove.com, and be sure to follow him on social media. You can find him at Coach Dave Love.